Welcome to Flights of Fantasy, your romanticy podcast book club. I'm Christina, joined by my book besties Kim and Anna, and together we're diving into the characters, theories, lore, and magic behind all your favorite fantasy romance books.
Breaking news!
We interrupted your regularly scheduled programming.
Oh my gosh. Listeners, we are so excited to be here today because we are here, Like Christina said, with breaking news, a very special emergency podcast episode from Flights of Fantasy, because Sarah J. Maas has graced us with her presence on Call Her Daddy with Alex Cooper. And my God, the bombs that she dropped.
Our lives will never be the same. Our lives have changed forever.
Anyone else like couldn't sleep? My mind couldn't turn off.
Well, I knew it was going to be great. We knew we were probably going to get ACOTAR 6, and she exceeded all the expectations one after the other.
Exactly.
I feel like I felt after I watched Taylor on New Heights. We've never had this access to Sarah before.
No.
And thank you, Alex, for giving it to us and asking the good questions. I was very impressed by her questions. But sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself.
No. I agree. So really quick, a spoiler warning for everything Sarah has written. There's no other way to say that. So
yes,
just spoiler warning for everything Sarah has written. Listen at your comfort level to spoilers.
Yes, you've been warned. If you haven't finished Throne of Glass or Crescent City or ACOTAR, what are you doing here? We love you so much.
Love you so much.
With our whole hearts, go read them.
Yes.
All right, so let's jump in. Everyone's been warned. And speaking of, with spoiler warning, I'm so happy we talked about all of the series. This was so fun that we addressed Throne of Glass and Crescent City. What a gift. Thank you, Alex Cooper. So excited.
It was just so fun to hear her talk. I just loved seeing her face. She looked gorgeous. She just...
So gorgeous.
She looked radiant. She looked happy, healthy.
Yes.
She seemed really at peace and excited.
Yeah.
There was joy. You know, she was really excited to talk about this. And we all rag on her a little bit for how long she has been MIA. We are guilty of that as well. And we say it with love, though. We've also always said, take your time, Sarah, because we trust in you. And deliver the product that you want to deliver. And I feel like that's what she needed to do.
Agreed. The amount of times she said that this was the right time and that she was in the right headspace and the details that she gave us to her mental health journey and her personal journey, I feel like what we're going to get from her is going to be what we waited for and what she waited to give us on purpose.
I agree.
This is going to be so worth it. Not only for us, I think for her to be able to deliver what she feels proud of and not be rushed.
Yeah,
you know,
100%.
Speaking of what she's going to deliver, here we go.
Oh my gosh, guys, we are just going to kick it off. We are not getting one. We are getting two. No, we're actually getting three. But we are getting two new ACOTAR books in the next 10 months.
Guys. We're getting an ACOTAR book in October, first of all.
Insane.
October. It is March, Sarah. And then and then the next one in January. The way that we all collectively lost our minds when she said, and then in January.
She was like, well, the reason why I can't tell you the page number is, and my brain couldn't, I was like, what are you going to say?
Because then Alex started being like, because I know you always have a plot twist. Is there anything else you want to announce here on Call Her Daddy? I was like, is there something else?
The way, like, I felt like my heart fell out of my body. I was like, no way. She's going to give us two books. And she said, hold my beer.
Exactly. And I still thought it was going to be a year out. And she said, not only am I giving you two, I'm giving you the next one in January.
Oh my gosh. And we are going to be so busy. The podcast is going to be so busy.
Welcome to our life.
Starting in the fall, take everything off our plates. This is what we are doing. Yeah. We are booked and busy.
Consider us booked and busy with ACOTAR for the next year and a half of our lives. But yes, to confirm what we know, is book 6 is coming out October 27th. Mm-hmm. What we also know is book 7 is coming out January 12th. What we also know is there will be a book 8, and that date is unconfirmed. Now, Anna, help us explain this part breakdown that she talked about.
Because I watched this a couple times now to like really make sure that I could understand it to the best of my ability. But what she said, quote, a book told in 4 parts. So essentially, it's going to be 3 physical books, but 1 story altogether. This is what she said. It's meant to be read as 1 massive story as opposed to like a trilogy, which kind of confused me at first. And I was kind of trying to think about like, well, what do you mean? Like, what's the difference between 3 books being 1 story versus 3 books in a trilogy? Can you, you know, she didn't really elaborate on that.
Yeah.
What I am kind of deducing from that is that when you have a trilogy, yes, there is like the big bad that covers a span of 3 books. But there's always within each book a little part of the battle that then helps fight the bigger battle. Does that make sense? So like there's a beginning, a middle, and an end in every book that is a part of a trilogy. Because it might end on a cliffhanger, but there has been some sort of story that has been kind of told throughout that we get a little bit of a resolution with, but then there's a cliffhanger that then kicks off the next book.
There's many arcs within the big
exactly,
arc.
Exactly,
exactly. Yeah.
So like, for example, ACOTAR, the big bad was like under the mountain and Amarantha and setting us up for that. And then in ACOMAF, it's Feyre's healing journey. And Tamlin is kind of the person that we're battling against. ACOWAR, it's Qyburn. But then the overall story is, you know, just Rhysand and Feyre coming together and Velaris and their story that's being told through the course of the three books. Now, I think, though, with this, what Sarah is saying is that this is meant to be read when they are eventually all released, like back to back to back, in the sense that it's a full character arc told over three books. Think of like Nesta's journey, but spread out over multiple books. Like if we ended book one with the hike.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And her being at this like very low place or coming out of the hike in this kind of more at peace place. And then we pick up the story in the next book.
Going to the Blood Rite.
Exactly. Doing all of that. So I think that is what Sarah is saying, that it's more of a character story arc versus like a plot story arc.
Which is tricky because we don't know who it's about.
Yeah.
But I think an example that helped me mentally is, I don't know if this is going to resonate with all of you listeners the way it will resonate with Anna and I and Kim. But when you think about Wicked the musical as opposed to Wicked the movies, Wicked the musical is one arc. When you see it, it is one complete story.
Yeah.
People had a really hard time with the fact that Wicked the movies, the second movie felt depressing because that was just the end of the arc. Mm. It's supposed to be matched with the first part in one sitting of a musical. But when we separated it into two movies, it was two individual arcs, but it was supposed to be looked at as one arc. It was the second piece to the arc that was started in the first movie. So I think it's going to maybe feel a little like that, where there are going to be many arcs and they might even feel a little disjointed in ways, but if you look at them all three together, it's going to feel cohesive.
I agree. I think that's what she's trying to set us up for. And she says, I am basically bucking all industry traditions with this. This is not something that's normally done.
No. And I loved when she said, when I sat down in Big Sky, Montana, the story felt big.
Yeah.
And this is the story she wanted to tell. And she didn't want to have to adhere to the rules of the glue that binds the book together or the spot on the shelves. And I love that she is going to break those rules to bring us this story that she feels so passionately about. Yes. And that Bloomsbury trusts her to do like this in this new way. And it makes me really excited that she's this excited about it.
Well, and because Sarah is such a well-known author, I think if this was like Throne of Glass, I mean, we all know what happened with Throne of Glass. She didn't want it to be YA. They made her publish it as YA. And then basically as soon as she got clout as a great author, she just said, you know what, I'm writing it the way I want to write it. And I'm not listening to what everybody else has to say now, and I'm not going to abide by what you tell me to do.
Right.
So really quickly, going back to what we know about the parts. So part one is going to be book six. Now, this is according to Bloomsbury. This was from their website. Book one right now, according to Bloomsbury, is 328 pages. That is the book that's coming out October 27th. That is going to be part one of the story that's being told. On January 12th, parts two and three, which will be book seven, is 928 pages. That is some Kingdom of Ash shit. She is a thick girl.
She is a thick girl. So pretty much if Kingdom of Ash was a piece of an arc, like that is where we're going with that. That's how big the story is, guys.
I know. I can't wait to get to chatting about the POVs. Okay, so, and then part four, she has said, is not written. She says part four has yet to be written. That's a direct quote. She follows up with the fact that she has been focusing on just writing one, two, and three right now. And she's like, I just wanted to get at those into everybody's hands. You fandom has waited long enough. And then I'm going to work on part four, which fine.
Great.
That is great, Sarah.
We are thankful. We will take it and say thank you, thank you, thank you, Sarah.
Yes, thank you, thank you, thank you, Sarah.
What are your thoughts on the fact that part one, what we're getting on October 27th, is 328 pages? That feels short for her. What are your thoughts on that page length?
To me, it feels reminiscent of Akafas, which was a novella, which was 272 pages. She did not say in the interview that part one is a novella. In fact, she said that she wrote part one and it was just so lengthy that she already knew that it was going to have to be more than one book if she wanted to include all four parts that were in her vision. So I don't know. I mean, what do you think? Do you think it's going to set us up? Like how Akafas set up Nesta in her book and us transitioning to Nesta's story. Is it going to be like that? I just don't know why she wouldn't call it a novella then.
Agreed. I think it's going to set up what's to come. Mm-hmm. But I think, again, it's going to be a piece of this arc.
Yes.
Where A Court of Frost and Starlight isn't necessary to read. It is helpful to read.
Yes.
And there are so many Easter eggs, and it actually really irks me when people skip it. But you don't actually have to read it to start Silver Flames. Mm. I think you are going to have to read this before you start book seven.
I agree.
And I think that's going to be the difference of this as opposed to Frost and Starlight.
Yeah, I agree. So let's just chat really quickly about what Sarah shared about her writing journey for these upcoming books and why it took her so long to get them out to us. I'm just going to run through a few things. First, a reminder that the last ACOTAR book that was released was A Court of Silver Flames, and that was in the winter of 2021. And she says, it took me a while to find the right story and to be in the right headspace. And then she says she went to Montana and she was like, it just poured out of me. And then she said, the story that was finally ready to come out of me was big, really, really, really big. And it came out of me in a way that surprised me. What do you mean,
what
Sarah?
What does that mean? What do you mean surprised me? This is very telling. I feel like she was sitting down to write the book we all thought she was going to give us. And she was like, something else is happening that is a surprise. What would that be?
So Alex asked her, you know, can you tell us whose POV this story is going to be written? And she said, no, no, Shant. But she followed up with, and that was one of the surprising things for me. And then dot, 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 she continues, you get a lot of insight into various things.
Okay, so that to me means multiple POVs.
I agree. It's giving Kingdom of Ash POVs.
Agreed. I think we're telling more than Elaine's story.
Yeah.
This really kind of works with my theory that this is Elaine's book, but we're also going to then get Asriel's POV and we're going to see them maybe have a little bit of a relationship, but then we're going to see them branch off and go other directions. Then we're going to get Asriel's story, maybe with Gwyn. Then we're going to get her story with whoever else. Maybe we're going to get Lucien's story.
Yeah.
Maybe we're going to get more. It's like we're going to get everyone's sparking off, everyone's POV, and then we're going to see where those stories go and we're going to follow them as well.
Yeah, I want to take it a step further because similar to how in Kingdom of Ash you had Dorian on his side quest, Kale on his side quest, Aelin on her side quest. I wonder if we're also getting Mor and Eris. And Koshay, we know, is the big bad, right? So if Lucien and Vasa and Jurien are all involved with Koshay, right? Because they are the band of exiles. And then we have Elaine's story, which obviously needs to be told. I think that's, at this point, almost a given that we're going to get Elaine at some point. And I feel like that's what this is.
Agreed.
Then Asriel's roped into that, and Elaine is tied into Lucien because of their mating bond. Then you have Mor, because I do think that even with Asriel kind of moving on from Mor, she is still a big part of their story. And Mor was so MIA in the previous book. And Eris, I feel like we have been setting him up.
Mm-hmm.
We have talked about this ad nauseum in all of our ACOTAR Revisited episodes, but we have been setting Eris up for some sort of character arc, I hope.
Yep.
And I would love to see, like you said, we start with Elaine and where her trajectory is going and how does it, it's like a butterfly effect. Like how does it all trickle down and where does everybody else go? And so it becomes this Kingdom of Ash thing where Mor is off doing her thing, but they're all trying to fight Koshay.
Yeah. No, I think that's valid. And I think that's that parallel of the side quest in Kingdom of Ash really translates, I think, to what we're going to do here. Because when you think, like you said, about Band of Exiles and also Mor.
Yes.
We have to think about when we last really saw her was in Frost and Starlight. And the last thing we really saw was that shadowy danger next to her.
Yeah.
Could that have been Koshay? Could that have been Bryaxis? We don't know. We've theorized. But I think we've put her on the shelf for too long.
Mm-hmm.
And she's important. She's a loose end that
everybody wants to be tied up.
Yeah, everyone needs to know. And that's another piece, though, of this. I think the way she described this with the surprises and with the fact that it poured out of her and with the fact that it's so big, I hope that by the end of book 8, we actually do wrap up all the loose ends. I think that's what she's planning. I think that's what she means.
When you say that, and with that in mind, do you think she's tying up every character?
I do.
She like closing the door on ACOTAR then? Like the way she did Kingdom of Ash?
Right now, I think yes. I think after reading book one, I might change my mind.
Yeah.
But right now, I think that this is the culmination and ending of the ACOTAR series as we know it.
I agree. I think she has other books. She said she has other books she wants to write.
Yeah.
She has other books that she's written on her laptop.
Exactly. I am confused about the decision to bring in Crescent City and then not do anything else with it unless we're just going to have like some little tie-ins there. Don't get me wrong, I don't want this to be a full crossover series. I think at this point that feels too ambitious and too much.
Yeah.
But I do think having Bryce say to Nesta, go find out what that eight-pointed star is, like them having that connection and the Dust Court, like mm-hmm. I don't think we're done with Bryce in ACOTAR. Mm-hmm. But at some point we had theorized from here, they're going to merge into one big mega series. Mm-hmm. I don't think that anymore. I think that's too much.
I agree. And I also just, from a reader standpoint, and everybody's allowed to have their own opinion, but from my reading journey, I really love that Throne of Glass is here. We have ACOTAR here and Crescent City here. I don't need anything more with the crossover. I just thought it was a beautiful way to tie in like this horrible tragedy with the Asteri and their corruption, and then tie it into like all of these other series and how they have ruled over worlds at one point or another. And I thought that was like a clever and easily digestible way to get all the crossovers to happen. And if I think we are going to see another crossover, or things are researched and brought up about past worlds, i.e. TOG or ACOTAR, it's going to be in another Crescent City book.
Yeah.
That's where I think we would see that.
I agree. I think that's totally astute and I totally agree with it. And piggyback off of that, adding that I like how she's done the crossover thus far with ties mm-hmm. into other worlds and CC with the last name and the brand and like
yes.
the Book of Breathings and this truth teller mm-hmm. being the blade and all of that, like those little amazing fan service moments have been incredible. And I would be excited about seeing more. What I don't need is characters from other series on page anymore. I think we've done that. And I think that was good. But I think now let's just like stay in ACOTAR.
I agree.
Stay where we live and where we are.
And I do think it would be weird, unless this new timeline of this new book is before the crossover happened. Mm-hmm. If it's after Bryce entered the world, then I think we would have to reference it at some point, right? I mean, it would be weird if it wasn't.
Well, logistically, we're going to have to, because there's no way this book does not in some way involve the Dust Court. And what we learn about the Dust Court happens with Bryce.
Great point.
That is a journey that Nesta and Azriel have. It happens with Bryce.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to at least reference that they know about the other world and who yeah. Bryce is.
And that Rhysand is also a descendant from Selene of the Dust Court. Like, we have to reference it.
Yeah.
Great point. That's an excellent point, Christina.
Another really fun moment while we're talking about crossovers and things. So Alex was asking about crossovers and, you know, things aligning. And Sarah's talking about the crystals on her desk, which, like, I just love her so much. She is a witch.
She's a witch.
Okay. So she was talking about how things just align sometimes mm-hmm. as she's writing, which immediately I was like, oh, so Aelin falling through the worlds. That's what you're thinking of. That just worked out.
Yes,
okay, fine.
Yes.
But then she mentioned something that happened recently. So she was like, and then speaking of something recently, and then she says, quote, it lined up. I did not plan it, but my subconscious, some human psychic thing. I jumped up out of my seat and I shut my computer and said, like, we're done here. This is too perfect. It worked out almost to a supernatural level. What is this going to be?
I'm so excited because clearly she said recently. So obviously it's going to be in one of the upcoming books.
Yes.
I'm so excited to read and be like, is this the moment?
Is this it? Is this the supernatural moment? Is this
yeah.
it? I'm so excited.
I can't wait.
Okay. So we also talked about the TV show. And by talk about, I mean, nothing really new was mentioned. All she really brought to the table was she confirmed that she does have the rights back to everything now. She said everything, so that's great. She said that getting the rights back to all of my things has been a big part of my journey in the recent years. I love this is very Taylor-coded.
Yep.
We know she is a Swiftie. I feel like she inspired this, Taylor and her. God, what if they had a phone call? Can you imagine?
Oh my God, the mastermind.
the masterminds die. Together on the phone being like, you deserve your rights. Go get those
Go
rights,
get
girl.
Your album, girl.
Yeah. Okay. But right now her focus is on books. Thank you very much, Sarah. And I do love that she talked about how she wants to be in charge and how she's so type A and she wants to see everything adapted, how she knows the fans want it. And she doesn't want to ever hear that we have to change this to appeal to XYZ demographic. And she doesn't want to be forced to settle for someone because she's being pushed in casting. I feel like all these little things were exactly what was probably happening to her at Hulu by the showrunner. Mm-hmm. And it was fun to hear her say this and then to be able to be like, oh my God, yes. Never settle for a Resand casting. Are you kidding me?
Yes,
get out
girl.
Of there.
Also, think about Heated Rivalry. They pulled it from big networks here in the U.S. because they're like, no, you're not letting us make the film we want to make. We're taking this to Canada. And God bless Canada.
God bless Canada. Maybe Sarah should take this to Crave.
Yeah.
Honestly, maybe Crave and Canada should be making the show. Anyways, I also did love that she was like, I've never been able to find a perfect reason. Like, how would you ever with casting?
How would you
ever? And you know what? How would you
honestly,
ever?
That's been my biggest hang up.
Yeah.
Hot take. I don't really want ACOTAR to become a series. I just don't. For me, it's like it just lives on page and it's beautiful.
Yeah.
I would kill to see Throne of Glass come alive on screen. To me, that is a Game of Thrones-esque level HBO series that could span multiple seasons. And it just feels more doable to me. There's something about ACOTAR, for whatever reason, maybe it's my own hangups, that feels difficult to bring to life.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I'm with you. Even though there are elements to Throne of Glass that would be difficult to do on screen, I think that Throne of Glass feels less risky to us because we watched Rings of Power together and there's pieces of Rings of Power and that level of cinematography and that level of green screen work that's happening that feels like I would trust them to do Throne of Glass.
Yes.
You know?
I agree.
Yeah. Let's talk about a little heavier topic, but Sarah walked through a lot of mental health topics last night. I was really happy that a lot of this was being talked about.
Yeah.
I think she used her platform in a beautiful way to promote therapy and promote really taking care of yourself mentally.
Yes.
That definitely resonated with us. And I think hopefully resonated with like a lot of people who maybe are not open to therapy and taking their mental health seriously.
We've had therapists reach out to us in DM saying that they just so appreciated her being open about this. And as girlies who have all been to therapy, that was really nice to hear. I mean, it's like,
yeah, we are therapy girlies.
I really liked this. And, you know, she was very, very open. She was very vulnerable. I think Alex Cooper did a great job giving her the space and making her feel comfortable and sharing so much of what she did. We've never really seen Sarah be this open in dialogue. And I think a lot of that also has to do with the interviewer and how they can make the person they're interviewing feel. So I really give Alex Cooper kudos.
She does that really well, Alex. I think that's why this podcast works so well is that she does have it set up like a living room. She does speak to you like your friend. And at the end of the episode, Sarah had her shoes off with her legs, you know, crisscross applesauce and just like chatting. And
did you guys know she had a Diet Coke at the end? Not sponsored by Diet Coke, but I wish it was.
Yes, I love it. I love it.
Okay, so Sarah talked about how going to therapy really wound up saving her life.
Yeah.
And she talks about Farrah's story in Acamath. She talks about Aelin's journey and how at different points in her life, really without realizing it until looking back retrospectively through therapy, that Farrah's journey and Aelin's journey mirrored a lot of what she was going through. She talks about Farrah's panic attacks in Acamath and that she was experiencing them but didn't really understand what they were. And that was probably a feeling that she put into Farrah without recognizing it.
Which is why when you read those moments in Acamath, they do feel so visceral.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I also really love that she really talked openly about how something that you love so much, her writing, and something that she has always aspired to do for a living, at some point there became like a fear attached to it and how that joy that you used to find in something that you love can get stripped away. And I think that she talks about that was kind of a really hard place for her. And then she moves into talking about her journey with Nesta. And she says that Nesta's journey was written in one of the darker, like, mental health moments in her life. And what she says is, what Nesta feels in that book, I wrote that as I was going through therapy. And then she's really tearing up at this point. And she goes in to talk about the hike and how she was in New Zealand with her husband. And she was like, I just had this vision. I was feeling all the things that Nesta feels in that hike. And I just was like, I know what I need to do for her character. I need to like write this.
And she was just like, let it all out herself on that hike too. One of the most powerful moments I think from last night was when she was crying and talking about looking at her son and saying like, this is what I'm fighting for.
Yeah.
Like, I want to be here for him. And like how beautiful that is and how scary that is to understand that you're in such a dark place. But I was so proud of her for sharing it. And it was just so impactful to see her talk about how this thing that brings her joy and brings all of us so much joy,
yes,
became something that was so hard for her, and that she, through therapy, has gotten past that and been now is able to find joy in it again. And that a lot of that was tied to her understanding that this success of her writing is not her entire being.
Her worth is not tied to her work.
And that realization for her is huge. Like how her therapist had her walk through what happens if it goes away.
Yeah.
What happens? And she worked through every scenario to then get herself to the place where she believed, okay, I would be fine.
Yeah.
I'd still have my friends. I'd still have my children. I'd still have my husband. And I'd be a florist, DJ, marine biologist. You know,
that.
Having that realization made it feel okay and safe to get herself out there and start writing again. And this is an exact example of why we all should have and will continue to give her grace, because she is just a person writing these books that we love and going through life. And as long as it takes her to give them to us, we are and will and should just be thankful and give her the grace she needs to get there.
I agree. I 100% agree. It's a good reminder for all of us when we are, where's the next book? Why is it taking so long? Why isn't she communicating with everybody? You know, you never know the walk someone else is walking. And you just have to, everybody needs to show grace. And we are all guilty of it. We are all guilty of, you know, wanting the next book. And I think it's a really solid reminder that you have to allow people the space to create their art. And if you want good art, you have to grant them that space.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. Yeah.
And I think there's also a really interesting, if you look back with her other series, like Throne of Glass was very much written, and also the beginning of ACOTAR was very much written in a time where social media was not a thing. And then, or it was a thing, but it wasn't what it is today. With the release of Akasoff and then Crescent City, that is when we had massive explosions in social media and influencers and book talk and Bookstagram.
Yeah.
And I do think, even though she is not online as much, she even says, like, I just try to avoid social media as much as possible. So there's so much outside noise and negativity that it is hard to avoid it at all costs. Like, you can try, but you can't. And I do think, you know, you compound that with entering a new phase of life in motherhood and all of what that entails mentally, creating works, which, you know, there is nobody else writing this for you. It's just her.
Yeah.
And I think you compound all of that, and it makes sense that she's just like, I just needed a break.
And you know what? Valid.
Yeah.
Valid. I also really loved the little tie-in that she gave, that while she was walking this walk with Nesta, she also kind of found her Valkyrie. She found her kind of Gwyn and Emery of her, like, girlhood friendship that wasn't tied to the worth of her work.
Yes.
It was just about being her friends.
Yes.
And I really loved that so much. And I'm so happy that she found that in that time. And that really translates to the Gwyn and Emery and Nesta found family
100%
dynamic. Yeah.
She was able to take something so personal, but make it digestible and accessible to the mass population. Mm. And that's why Nesta's journey is very difficult to read, but incredibly beautiful.
And so rewarding at the end. And that's why we all cry and we all relate to it so much.
Yeah.
And it feels even more relatable hearing her talk about where it came from.
Yeah.
Oh. And what a gift to get to hear her say those things.
Like, wonderful.
We've talked about them and thought them for so long, and hearing her say them, it feels both so validating while also just cathartic.
Well, we just finished Akasoff.
Yeah,
exactly. You guys are getting this. Our Akasoff revisited episodes are still not even finished coming out yet.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay, well, on Akasoff, Christina, can you walk us through what she talked about with Feyre's pregnancy?
Wow. Her talking about her pregnancy in general and childbirth, and I'm going to give a quick trigger warning for traumatic childbirth, because this was really difficult to listen to and hear her talk about. I'm so glad she shared it. It was so real, and so many people relate to it. And I know you definitely do. I had a C-section with my son because he was late and never dropped, exactly like she talked about. And hearing her say at the top of this section, I love my children. I am fucking obsessed with my kids, but I hated being pregnant. It was traumatic for me. Immediately, I was like, I know where we're going here. Mm-hmm. This is what happened with Feyre. This is why this was in the book. And it all made sense.
Yeah.
It all clicks, and it all really, again, feels like something she'd experienced being translated into this book, mm-hmm. into Silver Flames. Yeah. You know, like she says, it took every bit of joy away, where instead of focusing on this beautiful, beautiful baby growing inside of me, I was thinking about the food I was putting in my body and the constant tests and appointments mm-hmm. and probes being in me. And then she had the emergency C-section. And I was like, I couldn't breathe when she was even talking about going into the OR. Can my husband come with me? All these things that happened.
Yeah.
It's like, I was like, what do you mean Zach can't come with me? I didn't know I had to go be myself.
Yeah.
I was also in that moment panicked that I had to go back by myself. I'd never been in an OR. Yeah. Like,
oh,
I had a nurse hold my hand on one side of the bed while they gave mm-hmm. me the shot on the other side of the bed. And whenever I was laying there and I felt a pinch mm-hmm. and I was like, sorry, I felt something. I had a male anesthesiologist come up to me and say, are you sure? And thank God my doctor was like, hold on, stop everything.
Oh my God.
But the man asked me, are you sure?
No.
And I'm like shaking. I like didn't know what was going on by myself. Zach was in the room, but my doctor was like, do it again. But point is, all these things happen. And this is so relatable. And her talking about this trauma was what women go through and feel. And just another moment that I felt like was really, really impactful. And I know it probably really, really resonated with you as well in a very deep way.
Yeah. I didn't know. I knew that. I remember her talking about this, I feel like in a previous interview, where I knew there was like something with her birth story, but I didn't know the extent of it. And the thing that really stuck with me was when she said that she was like, I think about 100 years ago, I wouldn't be here and neither would my son.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be here and neither would my twins. Like I yeah. had, you know, it was really not a great, it was a not a fun delivery experience. I remember for years, I had a really hard time processing it. And I remember at one point we talked about having a third child, and I realized the reason I wanted a third child was to erase my first experience. Yeah. And it was my husband who was like, Anna, you don't know what will happen in another delivery. Like, that's not the reason to have another kid. And I was like, you are damn right. It's not a reason to have another kid. But like, that's how I felt. I just so badly wanted to erase my experience because I don't remember a lot of their birth. Like without all the details, it was a very arduous, long process that then I essentially had like a septic shock type syndrome. And then my son ended up having meningitis because he was exposed for too long and became very ill and was in the hospital for weeks with IV antibiotics. And it was a really insanely scary few weeks. And it was a really rough recovery. I did not have the same type of C-section. I had an OB who did an incredible job on my C-section.
Mm-hmm. Yes, as did I, luckily. Yeah.
So just listening to her talk about this, it was another situation in the interview where it was just really nice to hear from somebody that whose books you read and a person you love and look up to and love the way their brain works and the stories they write and the women mm-hmm. they create. To hear her talk about that and see the parts of herself that she puts into characters was just something that was honestly hard to put into words with how much I appreciated it.
I totally agree. It's beautiful. And it's something that I think so many women will resonate with mm-hmm. because, like you said, it is ingrained into you as a woman when you're pregnant that like it's going to be this beautiful, magical thing because it's supposed to be beautiful and magical and it's going to be amazing. And it's almost then when it's not, you feel... You're already postpartum and then you're like, but I didn't have that thing. And then does that make me bad? You can't control where your thoughts are going. And you've been told that this thing was supposed to be beautiful and magical and it wasn't.
Yeah.
And so having her talk about that as well, I'm hoping that that is inspiring and helpful to women who maybe are freshly postpartum or who have not gone on journeys to where they can find the beauty in their birth story or just are okay with the fact that that is a piece of their journey that's gotten them their perfect, beautiful children now. It's just, you know, it's like if no matter where you are, I'm hoping that what she said is helpful to people.
Yeah,
you know,
I agree.
Yeah. Okay. And then also just on the topic of her pregnancy, I did appreciate that she defended Reese. A lot of people in the fandom will still probably be up in arms about her defending him, but she really did defend him in regards to Feyre's pregnancy. So we'll deep dive that another time. I appreciated it. I liked where she was coming from there, especially when it's such a personal topic for her.
He's not perfect. And that's what makes him a good character.
Okay, but also speaking of Rhysand, I love that she was like, he just walked through the smoke onto the page and this sexy guy just appeared and I just felt it. I was like, what?
The line heard around the world, there you are, I've been looking for you. And she was like, it just came out of me. It wasn't planned. And I was like, I am so sorry, ma'am.
She was like, I thought I was writing this little fairy tale about Beauty and the Beast. I was like, oh, who's this stranger walking up to the bonfire?
And I was like, what, Sarah? because literally the way we've all lost our mind over that scene.
I love that this is where he came from, because it also feels like very meta, where she's like, the fact that he walked through the smoke onto the page in her mind was like, there you are, I've been looking for you. In her head saying, there you are, I've been looking for you. It's just
She's like, I guess you have been looking for me. I am here. Let's go.
Nice to meet you. My name is Sarah Janet. Welcome to the fandom.
Okay.
All right. So let's move on to speaking of fandom. She talked about Tamlin.
She did.
Don't think we're getting a redemption arc there.
Don't think we are. I think we can just go ahead and confirm that we are not getting a Tamlin redemption arc, at least in the next three books, if ever.
No, I think she was pretty clear.
She did an excellent job, I think, of articulating how she feels about Tamlin and more importantly, how Tamlin has affected a lot of women who have been in domestic violence situations and domestic abuse situations, and her just saying she doesn't want to invalidate any other reader's experience. But one thing she did say about Tamlin and being under the mountain was Tamlin doesn't have the emotional toolkit to handle the effects of, like, after under the mountain, which is what we've said. He doesn't have a foundation of love and trust.
Yeah.
You know, she says, quote, Tamlin made his own choices, but he's also the result of his past. And I think that was really excellently stated, and one of the reasons why we had so much fun discussing his character in our previous episodes.
I gotta say, I feel very validated by that statement. I think this really aligns with so many things that we said mm-hmm. about Tamlin. I also think it could align with Amarantha and him being mates. She was like, he went through a lot of trauma under the mountain.
Yeah.
He went through a lot from his past. But I really do think that her mentioning that she doesn't want to invalidate women mm-hmm. who have had this specific experience mm-hmm. with Tamlin and by reading Tamlin, I had never thought about that before.
Never.
And I am so glad that she brought it up, because it is so valid and absolutely important. Yeah.
I'm like mad that I never even thought of that. Like, wow.
Same. I feel so bad that I've never thought of it. No. And now I cannot think about anything else. Yeah. And I'm happy she said it.
I also think it's safe to say that an Elaine and Tamlin love arc is not in our future, which is fine by us.
Fine by us. I do think that that was made clear, I think, from what she has said about Tamlin. So speaking of, I love Alex Cooper for a lot of reasons. One of them is that she asked her, is Elaine rejecting the mating bond with Lucien? Bam.
Bam.
Okay. So pretty much her response was she being Elaine, she has a lot that she's processing. So exploring the concept of free will with a mating bond, what does that mean? What does it mean, Sarah
what
Janet?
What does it mean, Sarah Jubilee?
She also goes on to say some very interesting things about nature here, okay? She said, does nature get it right sometimes? Does it get it wrong sometimes? I find it to be an interesting concept where, like with Feyre and Nesta, where it was so easy for them, like nature picked right. But guys, this direct comparison of nature picking right and nature picking wrong, mm-hmm. and does nature get it right and wrong sometimes? I don't understand how we could see this and hear this and not be at least considering the fact that she's telling us here that Elaine's not going to end up with her mate. And that's what she finds interesting to write here, is the free will of what if I don't like my mate and what does that mean?
Yeah.
I don't know how she brings up the topic of free will and brings up the topic of maybe nature didn't pick right.
Mm-hmm.
And then somehow is like, but she ends up liking him so much anyway that it doesn't matter. Like, I don't know how we get back to her and Lucien together when this is how it's discussed.
I don't know. Or if it's simply the free will aspect of it is similar to Bryce and Hunt choosing each other. And okay. that it's they are forced to work together maybe. And it becomes apparent that, like, maybe the mating bond is rejected in a way or not accepted. Maybe I don't know if rejected versus accepted is different, right? You know, it's just simply not been accepted yet, not necessarily rejected. And they are forced to work together. And Elaine, we kind of tackled this a little bit with Nesta. And Nesta's saying, like, you know, I didn't choose for any of this. I didn't choose to become Faye. I just wanted a husband. And now I'm stuck with this, like, lifelong mate. And what the hell does that mean?
True,
and so
true.
Is that, did she kind of set that up already? And we're going to explore that even on a deeper level with Elaine, because she already chose someone and it was a human
mm-hmm.
and that she can't have that human anymore.
So I think you're onto something there, that concept with Nesta of I didn't choose this is going to be bigger and more prominent with Elaine, especially considering the first thing Sarah said here is she's processing a lot.
Yeah.
She's gone through a lot. I think that's where we're going to pick up with Elaine. Mm-hmm. And I also, though, think there is a reason that Sarah said, then we have perfect mates like Feyre and Rhysand and Nesta and Cassian, where it's that other piece of your soul that unlocks. She is saying that in a comparison, yeah. in a juxtaposition to a question about Lucien and Elaine. I don't think we're going to see them end up together, Lucien
I don't
and
know.
Elaine.
I really think it would be interesting to see a rejected yeah. mating bond. I also think it would be interesting to see them choose each other outside of the mating bond.
Yeah, I like that.
Like almost like they're not like nature gets it wrong, but we fall in love despite it or something.
Okay.
I don't know. There's a couple really interesting ways you could go about it. And if it is we fall in love despite it, that I can see why that would be a very long arc.
Totally. Oh, that would take a long time. That would take a long time.
That would take a long time. So I'm really curious.
I am interested in her ending up alone. And I don't mean that in a way that she's lonely. I mean that in a way that she is a fierce, strong woman that can take care of herself. And I do see why that would be a big arc from where we currently are with Elaine.
Yeah.
I am also kind of just trying to honestly find
find a loophole there where Azriel doesn't end up with Elaine.
I'm trying to grasp at straws here that I do still want Azriel with Gwyn. But I also do think that maybe Elaine would have a great arc in finding herself and finding her free will to
love who she wants to love.
Love herself. Okay, so we're going to rapid fire, friends. So first, what did Lorcan do? She said, I don't know, maybe that'll be bonus content or a Christmas present for you. Okay, amazing. Waiting with bated breath, Sarah. Also, where is Vaughn? Her response was, you know, that's actually a thing I think about a lot. And that's all I'll say about that. What are your thoughts? What do you mean?
This goes into the, like, well, maybe we'll get another novella at some point from Throne of Glass in the future.
And if it's Vaughn, I will
die.
Okay. Is the settling the same as or similar as the drop? She skipped it. Why did Aelin have to lose her powers? This was really interesting. She said she grappled with this and she did hate the idea of her having to give up something that she learned to love and embrace. But at the same time, she does think there needs to be some level of sacrifice when it comes to making a decision that big. I love this whole answer. She's like goes on to really convince me that it was a good idea. She's like, I like that. I think it's powerful. And
I agree.
It's the ending that it felt like it deserved. And that then by the end, it was a like different kind of journey she was going on. And I love this answer. And it made me feel really good about where her thought process was in this decision.
I agree. I honestly, it doesn't bother me as much as it bothers other people, because I actually like what she says, that your strength does not come from your power. It's like inner strrength. And that is Aelin. She is Selena at her core. And that is why Kingdom
exactly.
of Ash, honestly, when she goes in and she is Selena at the end of that book, and it's a full circle moment, and God damn it, we'd love to see it. So I actually am okay with this.
Exactly. And I'm also happy with her response to the question next, which was, you know, Alex said people online have expressed frustration that some of the female characters like her and Nesta have to sacrifice their powers while the male characters do not. And again, I loved her response here of these books are about women coming into their power, but also taking the magic away doesn't take away their strength.
Yes.
And that's why Nesta and Aelin realize they're still fucking badasses. I loved this.
I
loved that at the end she talks about Nesta and that losing her power doesn't make her any less of a hero and doesn't make her any less strong. And that answer is just a perfect little nugget of what we love about these books,
yes.
what we love about her and about these FMCs. Will we ever see our TOG characters again? She said, I mean, obviously I think about them all the time, so who knows? If my children let
Same
me sleep
Sarah.
In past five, sure.
Yeah.
Okay, girly pop. We will wait with bated breath again. Where's Manon now? She's in therapy.
Tracks.
Great. Happy for
Absolutely
her.
Absolutely tracks.
What happened to the World of Throne of Glass book? Will that ever be released? Pretty much she's like, I thought that was going to be like an easy thing and it wasn't, and maybe someday. Okay. Now, moving on to ACOTAR questions. We asked about Pool of Starlight and if it's a portal. And she said, who thinks of these things? And then Alex said, you. And then she was like, I mean, I do. But people just read too closely. I don't know. I'm not answering that.
I honestly, there was a few questions here. Fury Axtar with being the mercenary is another rapid fire question. And she was like, guys, am I ruining somebody's life if I say I don't know or if I deny or confirm this?
I love that.
Which I think is just all of us reading extra closely, too closely at things, but
yes,
it's fine. We're having a great time.
You know what? It's fun to do so, Sarah, and we're still going to continue doing it. Yep. I did love this. How do the Fae get in the House of Wind? Because like, if they don't have wings, do they climb the stairs? And she said, this might be something you find out. So I think that she's thought of this. I do think that's coming.
That's interesting.
So Alex said, what is Rhysand's last name? Sarah says, I'm not telling anyone. There's so much pressure now. And then she said, does it even matter? No. And then she said, Sarah says, I mean, like, he's one of one, right? So does that mean it's really not going to be some fun tie? It's not going to be Havelyard?
I really don't think it's, I really think she was just like, no, he's Rhysand. He is like, it's like Madonna.
It's Cher. It's Oprah.
It's Cher. It's Oprah. Exactly. It's Rhysand. We don't need, it's not darling, apparently.
So pretty much we should all just like cap it with those theories because I don't think we're going anywhere crazy with that.
Yeah.
King of Hibern's name, she was like Frank because that's not a sexy name.
Who cares? She's like, I really don't care.
And then she was like, that might be something that's discussed. So like, I don't know if that's really coming back. Okay, what were your thoughts on this Moore's power question? Alex asks, what are Moore's powers? Sarah immediately, very casual, is like, truth. As in, like, you guys know that. That's not a, what do you mean? And then she's like, oh, but there is something beyond that. And then she does seem to get a little flustered and says, like, everything's possible. You know, the answer is yes. You'll find out. So the first time I watched this, I was like, oh, she's trying to, like, hide something that is being written. The second time I watched it, it does kind of feel like maybe she's like, I know I should have that figured out. I will get there. Like, what do you think?
Yeah, that's kind of how I took it. So that makes me think either one, there's not anything more to her power than we have like been speculated, because I do, like I said, I want her to be in the next book.
Right.
And I was hoping we would get more of Moore in the next book.
Right.
In terms of like a story arc. But I don't know then if her power is just her power. And if Sarah was kind of like in that moment, like, well, it's truth. And well, shit, is it, does everybody think there's more?
Like, I mean, I do think there's more, two more, and I do think she's going to be in the next books, but this answer made me think that maybe her power is not going to be as pivotal to the plot as we think it's
going
to
be. So. Yeah. I think that's what we can take away. Okay, so moving on. All right, so continuing with ACOTAR rapid fire, can you tell us anything about the Dusk Court and are we going to explore any of it in the next book? She says, you have to know, and then she interrupts herself. What do you want me to say, Alex? What do you want me to say?
So, yes.
She goes, you have to know, and then she catches herself, and then she says, what do you want me to say here? So to me, that's like, if you read Crescent City, obviously we can't not talk about the Dusk Court.
This to me read as, you have to know that's a big part of the book, right, Alex? Like, what do you want me to say? I'm not supposed to, but like, come on. It's going to be about the Dusk Court. Like, yeah.
Okay. I cannot tell you how happy this next question made me. Alex asks about the location of Bryaxis.
Yes.
And Sarah calls her a she. She says, where do you think she went?
Yes. And I was like, for context here, Anna has, without reason, cause, or effect at all, been using a she pronoun for Bryaxis for legitimately years of our life.
Yes.
And we are always like, Anna, we don't know Bryaxis' preferred pronoun. Use they. And Anna respectfully always does.
I always do.
But mentally, she's always been like, she's giving me female energy. She's giving me
female rage. Like, I was so happy.
And it has now been confirmed that Bryaxis is giving us female rage.
I love it. I just imagine her out there torturing every like stupid male in existence. Like, it just brings me joy. I don't love that she tortured Cassian, but like, that's fine.
But also, where is she is very interesting. She's like, what do you think? I mean, fear itself. What is that? Where does that go?
I know. It's a very mom-coded way of responding. Like when my kids ask me something and I'm like, use your brain. I don't say that. I just go, well, where do you think it came from? Or what do you think is going to happen? It's such a parent tactic. And I was like, Sarah, I see you and I don't like it. I don't like it when it's done to me.
I don't like it when it's done to me. It's also very wife-coded where my husband's like, where is the remote? Like, where do you think it would be? Where would you look?
All right. So next one. Oh, this is a big one. Christina, this is a big one for you. Who is Mama Archeron? Is she descended from the Iron Teeth witches? She didn't answer. She joked. She laughed. She said she needed a drink. I watched this response 5 times to look at her face. And I was like, Sarah, what are you giving away in your facial expressions? And I still am like, go back and forth on, is it the Pool of Starlight situation where she's like, guys, you're reading into this? Or is it I don't know, I need a drink because like, I literally can't answer this right now.
I am hoping it's the latter.
Yeah.
I am really hoping it's the latter, and I am going to run with it because that is bringing me joy. But I'm really curious what you guys think, because I think it can be taken both ways. Yeah. I really do. I think she did a good job with this one.
Okay. Yeah. So really, really fast, moving through Crescent City questions. She asked, is Cormac actually dead? And I shouted, show me the body. But all Sarah said was, where do you find these questions? I'm like, that is not a no. That is not a no.
You know what? Still show me the body. Show Still me the show body. It to me. And how much did you love, though, that Alex started that question with, we never saw a body?
Yeah, I was like, Alex, do you listen to us? Because, like, literally that is all I say. I'm like, Alex, you can be friends. It's fine.
Please. Okay.
She asked if Bryce and Hunt were endgame, which was already confirmed in the Christina Lord interview years ago. But Sarah was like, yes, of course they're endgame. Like, no. And no, she does not end up with Azrael. Canon.
This was canon. Forever and always, it is canon that Bryce and Azrael are not together. I am very sorry.
Yes.
Girlies who love that theory, today is not your day.
Yes.
They are not getting together. It's not happening.
Yeah. Okay, so this question we are going to breeze through, but we are going to talk about this in a theories episode. How did the Book of Breathings and The Walking Dead end up in Jessica's library? So she says, I don't know. You'll have to stay tuned for answers. Let me tell you, listeners, we will be breaking that down in a theories episode, which there will be an abundance of coming to you soon.
Stay tuned.
So, okay, there are a lot of series that Reese and Rune are related. Can you confirm or deny? She did not answer. I will just say, though, that's the first thing Bryce notices when she lands in ACOTAR is the similarity between Rune and Reese. So to me, that's like confirmation that they were at some point distantly related.
Well, don't we actually know that they are? Because Rune...
Well, Celine and Thea.
Right.
That like, to me is like, yeah that duh. Okay, yeah. Is Maeve related to any of them? She again didn't answer it, but joked about handing over her notebook so that like, you guys can just comb through my notebooks to see these. Like, what are you guys talking about?
But does that mean that there's something in the notebook saying that Maeve is related to them?
Yeah.
Is that what that means? There,
I can't tell you, but the way my brain was spinning. She talked about the otters and she just said she loves otters. She was like, it sounded really adorable and I wanted them to be in the book. I was like, girl, that's fine.
You know what?
Yeah.
Her response of why aren't there otters was iconic and I loved it. And the fact that she said, why aren't there otters, and talked about how cute otters were. And this year we also got Taylor in the otter t-shirt when she was making that music video. It's Taylor coded again.
So who would win in a fight, Bryce, Aelin, Feyre, or Manon? I loved her response. She was like, they wouldn't fight. They would be like, this is dumb. We should support each other and go get In-N-Out burgers. I was like, yes.
Amazing. I loved this. And I loved it really just, it's the through line of female empowerment all the way through this interview.
Like, they're not going to fight each other.
No.
No.
They're besties. They would love each other.
And they are smart. They're not stupid little boys.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
It's not Kale, Adian, and Dorian, like, whipping out their dicks. Like, no. We're not doing that. That's a boy game.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, and Twilight of the Gods, she confirmed, was not happening right now. So
everyone, X that off the theory list. Okay. All right. So yeah, this was really, really fun. Wow. That was a lot. We covered a lot. We also have a really active, amazing group chat going on Patreon talking about this.
Yes.
It's been so, so fun with you guys. We cannot wait to come back with so many theories episodes. Really, this is just going to be our entire lives. So get ready. Stay tuned. We'll keep you updated as we go through this journey.
Yes. And we will link all of our Spotify playlist for every single series that Sarah has done, as well as multiple theory episodes. So we will link all of those into a Spotify playlist for you to go find easily in the show notes. All right, listeners.
Until next time, cheers and happy reading.
Cheers and happy reading. Bye.
Bye.
Well, friends, that wraps up another episode of Flights of Fantasy Podcast. Don't forget to join our book club community on Instagram and TikTok at Flights of Fantasy Podcast, where you can share your thoughts, theories, and favorite moments with us and fellow listeners. We'd love to hear from you. If you enjoyed today's episode, please rate and review us on your favorite podcast platform. Your support helps us spread the magic of romanticy to even more book lovers. Until next time, keep dreaming, keep reading, and remember, every good story deserves to take flight.